webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 6th of May 2016, broadcasting from the home of Redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, Music City, USA, where with Swami Sivananda, we say that the real spiritual progress of an individual is measured by the extent to which they achieve inner tranquility. And here from Houston, Texas, is that great unteacher, the heretic's hope, the preacher's paradox, and the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Sir Michael, how are you?
Eris, I have a question.
Question away.
Is it just me, or did you change your intro from "We love every train that is visiting or coming out of the Station of Freedom," or "every train of thought that is visiting the Station of Freedom"?
Well, it started off "every train of thought coming out of" and then going into, and I just thought "visiting." Say that's what I thought, mate. I don't know what else to tell you. It was just like
so your train is evolving.
Like I am. It's like years ago somebody said, look, learn from experience, but don't learn from your own. Learn from other people's. You're not going to live long enough to learn everything you need from your own. So, but, you know, I ignored him and I'm evolving.
Ah, well, I just thought I would ask the question. I thought maybe there's others that have said, ha ha. Eris is trying to pull a fast one here.
Well, there are others. We have, you know, the other three listeners have all said to me the same thing. How do we have three listeners in 187 countries? We do, though, you know. We've had 187 countries tapping into us.
That's what the graphics tell us. And good morning, Eris, right here from Michael Williams in Houston, Texas. And I am doing well, thank you. And I can tell by that glass of Coca-Cola that your day is off to a good start.
It most certainly is. Life goes better with Coke.
Yeah, evidently, yes.
And a number of other things.
I'm a real fan of Coca-Colas. Now, I don't pour myself a liter glass of Coca-Cola, but...
No, this is not a liter glass. Now, you're talking about Jeff Robertson. Have you seen his sippy cup?
That's a 2-liter sippy cup.
I have never seen a sippy cup as big. I reckon if he ever went to give blood, I reckon that they'd offer him, I don't know, $4 or $5 a bloody bottle. I mean, he's got to bleed pure Coca-Cola. That lad. Hey, how's your week been? Good?
It has been good, yes. Houston has started drying up, and then it started raining again. And didn't get too much, got the creeks started rising again, but we didn't get any real flooding out of it, but we are back under.
You're under the anointing?
Well, the anointing of rain, and it comes down and comes down. But it really has been a good week. I've had wonderful conversations. Our gospel revolutionary, Derek Hensel, is... the boy thinks through things, and that to me is very exciting. And but he is down to the dissection of every thought that I've ever shared about the gospel, and he's dissecting and pulling it apart and placing one against the other in comparison. He's not just comparing the gospel that I've taught for all these years. He's now comparing the gospel I teach with the gospel I teach. So,
oh, okay. What's happening around the world with the gospel revolution, mate?
There is a lot going on, as always. Some of the folks have maybe read the post on Facebook that Moses has had another medical bout and wound up with some ulcers and had to go into the hospital for a couple of days. He's out. He is on medication now for this and has had one more bout with it. It didn't hospitalize him, but he tells me he's getting well. Moses always wants to put best foot forward. He loves giving me good news. And sometimes when there's just no good news there, sometimes he doesn't want to tell me the whole news. So I'm a bit concerned, but I think from what he says now, he is out of the hospital. He is doing okay.
I want to talk about my upcoming move.
You always want to talk about you. I just don't know when we're going to get through this part.
We probably won't. I mean, if we didn't get past it by now, we're never going to get past it. Yeah, just face it and accept it. But I was listening to some of our early work, and I'm telling you, I was so great in my own mind back then. And when I listen to it, I go, my God, what a primitive kind of a broadcast that was. But anyway, I was listening to it, and I have to tell you, we have done some darn wonderful work on this yeah. podcast. And can I recommend to everyone, just go back. Now that they're up on the web, it's so easy to download them. I mean, it's nothing like it used to be.
Well, I know.
But download them and listen to them. And I was listening to one close to the beginning called Parasites, Pigs or something. I can't remember. Prophets, Parasites, Profiteers and...
And prostitutes or something.
Yeah, prostitutes. Yeah, do it for money.
It started with a P. We did it.
You got it. And mate, I just think we did some great stuff. And I'm going to go back through everything we've done and just do the highlights and recall the highlights so that we can direct people to listen to a podcast. I remember years ago. This is. Come as some minor surprise to you, but I used to be an Amway distributor. Mm-hmm. And I learned in Amway that instead of taking up your time telling people the answer again and again and again and again, what you do is you say, go to tape number 536. So we're going to start saying more and more to people, well, go to this podcast. It's right on there on the podcast page. Have a listen. That is going to be a really good answer because, Mike, we have covered a lot of ground, haven't we, in the gospel?
Yeah, we just got to get them cataloged for folks, which is only reasonable that we do that for them. And this should not be an extraordinary thing. But if we can get this cataloged with a description of the show and the things that we address, and even the questions that we have addressed, what a wonderful thing that would be.
We have another job for Kim Novak, I'm going to guess.
For sure.
Oh, mate. And I wanted to talk about my upcoming move to Cullman. Now, we're moving from Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee, to Eva, Alabama. Essentially, it's Eva. It's called Cullman. But it's really Eva, Alabama, and I'm going to have to invent the new term for Eva, Alabama. I'm walking into the hardware store yesterday morning. There's a guy who, when I tell him my age, he says, oh, you're just a spring chicken. All the men in the hardware store have got baseball caps, you know, with John Deere or something like that on them. And he stops me. He actually touches my arm as I opened the door, and I turned and looked at him, and he said, how are you, son? That made my day. And then I said, I'm really well, thank you for asking, and yourself? And, he actually seemed, either he was in his second childhood and thought I was somebody he knew, or he really was interested in me, and I'm going, I didn't believe places like this existed on the earth anymore.
No, believe me, with that Aussie accent, he had no inkling that you were somebody he knew from Cullman, Alabama, Bears.
Come on. Oh, the girl in the local Foodland store, she wants me to bring her back a koala bear, but not just a and I said to her, you know, well, how much can a koala bear? But she she didn't see that joke, and I told her I'd be back in the afternoon with it. So It didn't work. It didn't work. I wasn't able to come back with one, but I did say to her, she said to the guy before me in the afternoon, she said, "You have a wonderful day, sir." And I said to her, "You know what? You said that to me this morning, and it's actually worked. I'm having a wonderful day." It's just the most, this is so Mayberry. It is
Coleman not, is not ready for you at all.
But it's going to get me. So now now I've got to invent a new term for Coleman, and I'll tell you why. These people down there are the friendliest people I've ever seen. Now, I'm not saying that they don't have their own biases. This is what and Americans may understand this, and I'm not going to even try to explain it to other people. It's called a sunset town here in the South. But do you remember Chris Harrison, Mike?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, Chris Harrison and us had an interesting hour in a hotel room in Coleman when you were there last, and he has been on our website. He's been alternatively inquisitive, inquisitorial, and downright adversarial.
But, we have other words for it, but yeah.
So I ring him up and I say, "Listen, mate, have you got a crew? I don't mind paying them. I'll pay them good money. And I just need someone to help me tear the carpet out of this house that I'm moving into." Well, before I heard back from him, I hired another couple of guys to do that yesterday. But he comes back later and says, "Yeah, I've got a crew for you." I said, "How many are there?" And he said, "Five of them. They're one of my home groups." Now, just for those of you who don't know Chris Harrison, he runs a church called Church 212, 212 being the, I think, boiling pot of water, is it? And he said, they're called Caring Hands or helping Hands, and it's a home group in his church, and they have a leader, and they're coming out tomorrow morning. I'm down there again tomorrow. And you know what he said? Chris Harrison used to have a Facebook page, and I used to call out Christianity. And, of course, when people are in a certain place in their development from Christianity, in their journey out of Christianity, they confuse the church with Christianity. I was listening last night to a podcast you and I did way back where you were training me out of making that mistake. And so he thought I was attacking the church when I wasn't. I was attacking the manifest abject failure of Christianity. Yeah. But anyway, after he gave me the crew, he said, "Oh, by the way, go back and post on your page how bad the church is." So I thought, "Oh, mate, take my hat off to you, Chris Harrison. Thank you for the crew." And I would have said the same thing probably. I mean, I might have said the same thing. Never miss. And he said to me, I waited for a day before I posted that. You know that, don't you? And I said, "Yeah, you waited on the Lord, didn't you?" Yeah.
Yeah, it really is amazing that people have a difficult time with that. I've done all I know to do, except for my own slip-ups and using the term inappropriately, and that is that the church is the body of Christ universally. The church is not a local entity or an organization whatsoever. So whenever we make, in fact, I get upset with Christianity when they say that the church is in danger, the church is flawed, the church is really messed up, and all of these things, because it cannot be. Because to say the church is messed up is to say that Christ is messed up.
Why is the church and Christ interchangeable?
Because the church is the body of Christ. And so it is one and the same. And that's where the issue of the gospel that we're sharing comes into play in this terminology. The only way we can criticize, and every group needs criticism. It's not healthy not to have criticism. So we can't use the term church.
You mean you mean like Derek Hensel criticizes you against you?
Yes, so we got to use the criticism within the criticized area and be specific as to what it is that we're being critical of. And we are not being critical of Christians. There are, as far as character or nature or goodness or good works, there's a lot of people that are Christians that do good work, but it is when they begin to feel that Christians are the only people that do good work. There's Muslims that do good work. There's Cherokees that do good work. There's Buddhists that do good works. And there's atheists that do good works.
But of course, the common Christian comment might be, yes, they do good, but they're not doing it in the name of Jesus.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Or all that good won't get you to heaven. Just being good won't get you to heaven.
And that's where we start criticizing Christianity, because that's all bull malarkey.
Bull malarkey.
Bull malarkey. Ah, yes. So, see, we can go very quickly from talking gently and crisply and warmly about many, many Christians, and then go to bull malarkey when it comes to Christianity. But never the church.
Bull malarkey.
Yes.
So I want to give a personal shout out to Chris Harrison and everyone from Church 212 in Cullman, Alabama.
Oh, thank you guys.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. The house I'm moving into just needs a serious remodel. And by the time this has gone to air, you guys will have played a part in it, which has impressed me to bits. And thank you so much. That's what I call love in action. If you want to know why I criticize Christianity, I criticize it because you don't see love in action generally. Now, some of you have known churches where that exists. I have not, and I've been in some of the biggest churches in Australia and a couple of reasonable-sized ones here in America. Love in action, I think, is it's what you guys, Helping Hands, are doing from Church 212. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, William, and all of you guys.
I criticize Christianity because it tells little children if they don't believe in Jesus, they're going to burn in hell forever. That's my reason for criticism, regardless of how much love they show.
I am God, and I love you so much that I invented hell just in case you don't love me back.
That ticks me off, yes.
I interrupted you in one of your sessions up in Calgary just to say that one day, and I guess I'm not sorry. New updates on the website, www.gospelrevolution.com. We have switched around the headings a little bit. If you want to find the radio, if it's under podcasts, and it's everything's there. Nothing will change. We're not going to take anything away from the Gospel Revolution website. We're just going to add things to it. And you may have to go hunt and peck and find it, but just know that it's there. And I just want to say thanks to Marcel Roos. Marcel, over in the Netherlands, is running our radio station and is doing an absolutely superb job, as is Jeff Robertson with his videos. Now, Jeff, last month, was running a pledge drive and at the same time found it possible to put out two videos a week, a midweek video and I think it's a weekend video. And, mate, I've got to tell you, this last week he let out a video called Finished Means Finished. Well, when the heck didn't it? Oh, that's right. It means it never meant finished when all didn't mean all. <It's>,
yeah, he was kind of addressing our preterist friends in that video. And, it was worth repeating again from the Gospel Revolution. And, it's really amazing that these folks find such a difficulty working around this issue of preterism.
And the other video that Jeffrey put up in midweek was The Gospel Brings Relief. Do you remember those old ads on TV? Do you have tired blood?
Yeah. Iron poor tired blood.
Iron poor tired blood even. Well, that kind of relief. It's a kind of relief I get now when I get up in the middle of the night to take a couple of Tums. And Jeff put out a video called The Gospel Brings Relief.
Yes, and indeed it does. And we appreciate Jeff doing these. He's making rumblings that he would like for someone else to start stepping in and doing this. I think he feels exhausted of his repertoire. But every time he's been saying that for a year.
Well, James Taylor used to do a lot, but then James got involved with a woman and now has his own little James Taylor. Actually, I think it's, what's her name? Not Emily? James Taylor has his own little baby, and
aww.
And I mean, he's got a life, so he doesn't do the videos anymore.
Yeah,
James.
We have to depend on people that don't have a life, you know.
So. Yeah, so stay out of it, Jeff. At the end of the show every week, we say there are other ways than cash to help us, you know. I help us probably, now, I'm just guessing here, and I'm making up figures, but I reckon, you know, I spend about 15 hours a week doing this podcast because there's prep time, there's post-edit time, there's all sorts of stuff that, and I usually start editing about 3 a.m. on a Thursday morning and finish about 3 p.m. There's 12 hours right there. And then there's the 2 hours of prep. There's reaming through all of the emails we get and the people who call in on the voicemail line. There's the time we do this show, which for me is about 2 hours. So, you know, you're up to about maybe 15 hours of, you know, work time.
Are you trying to get a raise or something?
Didn't you just tell me to bank a check? Let me have a look. Oh, yeah, this check is from last February. I'm that far behind. No, I'm just kidding, family. But we all give something, and I give this. Someday, someone will come along, Mike, who can do this better than me, and I will happily yield the job to them. Not a problem. And someday, someone's going to come around and do some videos or do the radio show or whatever it is.
Hey, I've been looking for somebody to replace me for 20 years. So.
Yes, yeah, so have most of the movers and shakers in Christianity, actually. They want to replace you as well. You're nothing but a thorn in the side, mate. Something you'll be hearing us say this week and every week for this month is that those of you who are used to downloading PowerCasts from somewhere other than the Gospel Revolution site, you'll be losing your download capabilities at the end of this month. Come the end of this month, we are no longer using Podbean to host our podcasts. Everything you need about podcasts will be found up on the Gospel Revolution website. In fact, that's one of the reasons we created the new website, so that you could download it and subscribe to it. You can do whatever you like. Anything you did anywhere else, you can do it only better, because now you've got a search capability that you can search for immediate results, and you don't have to go through all of the process you had to on Podbean. So for those of you who are using Podbean still, you can use it for the next, 2 weeks, but be aware, 3 weeks, but be aware it's coming to an end abruptly at the end of this month. All right. Now, where did we get up to last week?
We were in Exodus. We made it down through, not very far, actually, because we went to Hebrews after we pulled the story out of here in Exodus, and then we went to Hebrews and actually read it in Hebrews, because we figured, why should we teach on this here when Paul taught on it there? So we went there and took his teaching in context and let it stand for itself, which really informed us a great deal about this issue as to whether or not God was angry.
Now, for people who are just tuning in and haven't heard the precedent podcast, we're talking about Exodus chapter 19, Exodus chapter 20, and Hebrews, I think it's chapter 12, isn't it, Mike?
Yes.
Okay, so we are comparing Sinai, the mount where the law was given, with Mount Zion, the mount where peace was given.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the idea that there was an angry God, because we all noticed that people say that God was not angry. That must have been our misinformation, our misguided rhetoric that kept telling us that there was an angry God. And the reason I think people do that is because in this day of political correctness in the modern West, it's just too nasty to think of a God that wants to kill people. And here's what I've heard you saying for the last few weeks, Michael. Wouldn't it be better if we just took the story the way it lay and have a look at the New Testament commentary on the scriptures, in this case, Paul? It is so easy to just, somebody says something easy. I mean, I was listening to some tapes this week, and so are you, Mike, some messages by a South African chap, and he was essentially redefining terms.
Yeah.
Yep. Wrath is not wrath, it's this. Anger is not anger, it's that. If God was angry, it was at this, not at that. And I keep asking people on different websites one question, and they keep dodging it.
Yeah, if wrath isn't wrath and anger isn't anger, why is it they died, and according to the scripture, at the hand of God?
Yeah.
I mean, was it an entertainment like the Colosseums for God? I mean, you know, God forbid. But that really, either you extract this major portion of the whole story, you know, and if we've got a declaration of peace, why do we have a declaration of peace if there wasn't the absence of peace? So, these questions just go on and on and on, and they refuse. Bears, here's the thing that we've found so far is they refuse to address them. They refuse to address them. And we're asking them, okay, so you're saying this. This is the problem that we find with what, and these are sweet people. These are precious people that as far as the ones I know, and I do know several people that are in this line of thinking. But I do not understand the evasiveness about answering these questions. And we're presenting legitimate questions. When I first started teaching the gospel of peace in 1982, let me tell you, it was revolutionary in the Christian world to have a voice to stand up and say, God is no longer angry. What a revolutionary thought.
Because the Christianity in which you then existed said God used to be angry, and then at the cross, he forgave you of your sins if you accept him, but now if you do anything wrong again, he's going to get angry again.
He's angry again and is still angry at the whole world for their unbelief and is going to come back on a white horse and slaughter everybody. So this whole anger of God thing, to be able to scripturally go in and help people understand that, yes, that was the case, but is no longer the case, that was a gospel revolution. Now, there's people actually saying that, no, a gospel revolution is to believe that God was never angry with man before at all. Now, let me tell you, in 1982, the thought that we would come to a point that, you know, my life's work was carved out for me, and that is to help people understand the gospel of peace. And out of that has evolved, oh my gosh, the understanding of the rest of the scriptures of grace and sin and righteousness and the end of the world and blah, all of this stuff. I had none of that. But the gospel of peace has been that which has fostered the understanding of all of these other subjects in context. But to think that I would come to a point when there would be a controversy with a group of Christians, and they still do very much claim to be Christians, and to think that we would come to a point to be in a controversy about saying that God was never angry, that was never a concept, that there would be a group of Christians who would actually come to a point to say that God was never angry. Now, this is a fact, and that is a lot of, not all of, but a lot of these folks who have concluded that God was never angry have actually first gone through the gospel of peace that I have taught, and that is that God is no longer angry. So suddenly there's become this inability to resolve how was God angry and how is he not angry, and their logic is he just never could have been angry.
So the evolution of, quote-unquote, the anger of God for you is, once he was God and happy, and then he created man, he was not angry. He was very, very happy with his creation. He said, it is good, at the end of the creation time. Then he found that man had done something that he'd asked man not to do, And he didn't get angry.
Mm-mm. It's not there.
But for the protection of the man, or the humanity, he barred him from Eden.
Yes.
And his own son, Adam's own son, who killed his other son, he actually put a mark of protection on him.
Yes.
Thus protecting a murderer. And then fast forward to God's oracle people, the Israelis, and the fact that they wanted to have organization rather than organism. They wanted, later on in life, they wanted to have a king. Mm-hmm. We want a king. Give us a king. Make us a great king. We'll choose our own king like all the kingdoms. But going back a little bit, they wanted a law. They must have wanted the law because they said when it came down from Sinai, they said, oh, wow, now this is going to be righteousness for us. So, and at that point, if I'm reading you right, God suddenly turns from, well, a bit of a cosmic Santa Claus, really, to, in the realest sense of the word, into a jealous, angry, I mean, he was just a messed up, he was like one of those Hell's Angels on drugs. And then after that, along comes Jesus. The process proceeds to a true gospel of peace where God is now no longer angry.
Well, first off, let me say, I have no clue what state of mind he was in before he created us. The only concept that we have of God, and this is a given, the only concept we have of God is in his interaction with the human race. It's the only concept we have of God. You couldn't have a concept of God without that, without this interaction.
You can't have a concept of God without the human race? I mean, he pre-existed the human race, and one presumes, without trying to teach a belief system here, that the Trinity was sort of a multiplicity of personages within one personage.
Yes. We can only have a concept of God based on his relationship with humanity.
Ah.
Yes. If you'd listen, you'd get through these things.
You know, if I listened, this show would only be about half an hour long, I reckon.
So that's how we get this this understanding, and it is not it really is it would help things to be much simpler, but you see, it wasn't just the inception of the law that caused God to turn instantly wrathful and angry. Because as the story that we brought out before is the way God dealt with Egypt. I mean, if we look at that, I mean, goodness gracious.
Well, hold on. So he got angry before the law was given.
Yes.
Well, what brought on this diabolical change?
Well, that's what we still need to examine. We see that Lot's wife coming out of, we see Sodom and Gomorrah, we see all of these things that took place also. For God's sake, the flood, I mean, which destroyed the entire human race. So this is not we do know that Paul explained to us that the law works wrath.
So the law could have worked that which pre-existed it. Okay. So at some point,
it progressively became worse.
Almost like a cancer.
Well, it almost like a story. I mean, this is like watching a great movie, and you watch somebody that gets a little ticked off downtown, you know, and then somebody does something, and it's like, it's a little worse, but then and to the point to where that you're name calling and you're on two different sides and you got your group, they got their group, and a whole war breaks out. So this was like a war breaking out between God and man. People are really hung up about this issue of separation from God.
Do you think we were ever separated?
No, there is nothing that ever says that man was separated. And herein we miss the whole point.
In this day and age, we say we're not separate because we are one, but that was a different kind of separation you're talking about back then.
Yes, from the way God created man in his image, God never separated from his image, which he created. Let's use a marriage for comparison. Usually, if a marriage goes bad, or a business relationship, or a friendship, then what they do is they come up with a separation. For what point? So that the violence will end, so the anger will end. Well, if separation does that, which we know it does, I'll guarantee you that the nation of Israel, Egypt, the whole nine yards would have loved to have had a separation from God. But they didn't. This relationship between God and his image remained, and the fact that he was angry with them and carried out his wrath and anger is part of proof there was never a separation between God and man. The relationship went bad, but there was never a separation. You can't find that.
Was there ever a separation between God and any human?
You can't find it. I don't see it anywhere. I'm certainly open to finding that somewhere. I've spent almost 45 years of my life searching scripture, but I'll tell you one thing. I can read something again in the book of Galatians and realize, my God, where did that come from? I mean, we just went through a whole transformation of the understanding of Romans 8, 9, and 10. This issue of was God separated from man? I was on a phone call with Chris Harrington, and Chris has been a dear friend of mine and of the Gospel Revolution. The story is profound, and so we began to talk, and Chris started explaining the big problem. And the big problem was that people thought that they were separated from God. Well, Chris has never heard me go into detail in this, but well, actually he has, but he was explaining that man was never separated from God as though it was a departure from what I teach. And it's like, no, you're right. We're in total agreement here that God was never separated from man. The problem is that God created man in his image. Now, this is the issue. But you see, the reason that this transition, the issue can't even be God's anger. The issue cannot even be any perceived separation or anything else. This is the big picture, Barris, and this new doctrine eliminates this powerful understanding of the cross, and that is that God created man in his image. That was the first creation. The new creation, which they are wiping out the entirety of this understanding, is that God and man became one at the cross.
So give me the big picture in as few words as you can. I know I'm asking. I mean, it's an Olympic event for you. I know.
I can do it. The big picture is, without filling in the nuances, that God created man in his image, a separate entity from himself. This is the story. I'm not going to try to explain the story. I'm just going to give you the story. God created man in his image. Things happened that caused not a separation, but a problem between God and his image. The problem was not sin. The problem was not the law. These weren't the problem. The problem was that we were in the image of God and it wasn't going to work. So God says, I'm going to make a whole new creation. I will resolve all this for myself and for them. I will become them and they will become me. End of problem. That was the work of the cross. And this whole new denomination, I call it because it's created out of one or two verses, they extract the power of the cross. They take away the wonder of this union between God and man at the cross because the cross was only a revelation. I'm wanting to understand where these folks are coming from, but I can't find one place in the Bible or the scriptures where the Bible or the scriptures say what they are saying. They take a verse from the Bible and then say what they say. But the issue is that story in the Bible?
Last time I was in Calgary, and I hope there'll be another time. I haven't heard from Vic yet. He hasn't asked me to come up, so I'm really hoping that... I mean, I'd even pay my own way just to get the buffet. You know that, don't you? I taught on what I saw as being the overarching plan of God. And in that, I shared that if you start from a subset rather than a superset, you're always going to only have part of the information. And a great example of that is if I'm in the sciences and I teach the superset of what makes things hang together, if I learn that first, I'll probably understand biology or astronomy or geology or any of those things. I'll understand them better. But if I start off from the subset of biology and try to understand physics, it's never going to happen because I've only got a subset to work with. All I've got is dissecting frogs. I don't have a larger superset around which I can build my logic. So I want you to try to do something which I know is hard for you because you get your teeth around individual concepts, whereas I start from the other end. And I want you to explain what you just explained. I want you to explain it in the light of and as a result of the fact that we, that God's eternal plan was that we should all become one. If his eternal plan was that we should all become one, then he must have been working towards it from, you know, maybe the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think I'm hearing you say is, well, God went this way and then that way and then the other way until he got a plan that worked for him. Now, if you don't want to put this to air, that's okay by me.
No, I just have to respond to it from where I am. Barris, I see where that there is a possibility that others see it as a conclusion. I see that God had a plan. I do know that the ultimate of everything God ever did was the cross. To say that God started out with all of creation as the cross in mind, that's a leap for me. I don't see that story. I see indications that story might be there, but I just don't have that. I don't, in other words, I don't find a place where it says, now the reason God did all this is because this was the way he planned it. Now there are verses, but you know how it is with verses. We can always pull out a verse, but I like the story. We do have a story, however, of how that God created man. God said, don't eat of the tree. They did eat of the tree. We see a progression of a story that took place. I have no problem with either one of them. But at this point, I am not in a position to say that I know which one it was.
So, Michael, are we going to go back to Exodus? Or what are we doing here, mate?
Well, where we're going is that we're really trying to address this for people because this has become a subject that the, number one, the entire gospel revolution is based in the understanding of a gospel of peace. So to establish a gospel of peace, we need to establish that God was angry. I'm not getting why we need to sanctify God. I just don't understand that at all.
Now, what do you mean by that?
That we've got to make sure that God is justified by his works.
What do you mean by that?
That God has to have works that equals righteousness.
Whose righteousness?
Barris, we're trying to judge God's righteousness by our righteousness through the law. So we've reverse engineered this thing, and we are now trying to make sure that God is as good as a Christian is, at least. You know, we don't get angry.
well, not let's not go too far. A Southern Baptist, at least.
Exactly. You know, at least he's as good as a monk, you know.
Do monks live in monkeries? I mean, if a nun lives in a nunnery, does a monk live in a monkery?
I don't know. We could
It was just a bit of curiosity, idle curiosity on my part.
Does a deacon live in a deaconry? Talk about rabbit holes. You accuse me of rabbit holes. Look where you just jumped. So the we are. There's two things here at this point, and that is the need to judge God based on our perception of righteousness. We have, folks, the power of this mirror image, if you will, is that we now have become righteous regardless of our works and deeds, including murder and maniacal murder, including Hitler-esque situations. The validity of our righteousness is outside our deeds. And we will not afford God the very same righteousness.
Okay, can you say that again in different words? Because I want to hear it.
I don't have any other words.
No, we'll just say it again in that case.
We are trying to take our perception of righteousness, what we understand righteousness to be, by the law. We're trying to put God under the law and then saying, therefore, he could never have been this way, because we judge righteousness by whether or not you do or don't do certain things. But we've become righteous without these things, Barris.
I think that we take our ethics, which in this day and age is situation ethics. It's okay here, but it's not okay there, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And we put our ethics and our morals onto God. Because if we did the law, I'm not sure that it's the law. I think that we just simply take our ethics and our modern political correctness and say, oh dear, somebody who can kill, no, that's not, why wouldn't it be right for God? Because it ain't right for us. And I think that's what you're saying.
I remember one of my most powerful points of turning in my understanding of the gospel, and I've shared this story before, Barris, was finding the man who wrote The Legalist. Mm. It was the only book that I had found on planet Earth.
Is he still alive?
You know, I don't know. I started to do a little search for him the other day, and I don't know that he is. I don't know that he's not. But this book, The Legalist, for the time, and I've had friends get it and read it and say, Mike, you know, this just has almost nothing in it. But you got to realize at the time, it had something in it. It had at least an acknowledgement that there was a difference between grace and law. Folks, please understand, we have gone through a gospel revolution just to define that there's a difference between grace and law, that these two do not exist in the same creation. The law existed in the old creation. It does not even exist in the new creation. Grace exists in the new creation. So this book had some understanding of that, and I thought, I got to find this man. So I did. I went there, and they invited me into their home. It seemed almost reluctantly, and when I got in, this man was in a recliner. He was sick. He was mentally and emotionally distressed. He was not in good shape. I was thanking him for his book, and he said, I should have never wrote it. It was a mistake, and was just in anguish. I mean, I've never seen anyone in more anguish physically, mentally, and emotionally at one time. So if based on doctrine, I should have walked out of there and said, boy, we'll see where this goes. But that's not what happened to me. They asked me to pray for him when I left, and by that time I already knew when I prayed for him, nothing was going to happen. There wasn't even a deception or an illusion in my mind that when I laid hands on him and prayed for him that something was going to happen as a result of me praying for him. We'd already been there, done that, and so I laid hands on him. I prayed for him. I left. I saw the anguish of this man. And when I got out in my car, in my van, I was driving a conversion van, and my whole being went into a collision. There was a massive collision going on inside of me between the old and the new. And I was angry with God for not healing this man. I was furious that he was not, that all of this stuff I had been taught in the Word of Faith movement, not only was I beginning to understand grace, the unraveling of all of this Word of Faith doctrine collided right there, sitting at the steering wheel in my van. And I began to scream cry. Not cry, scream cry. My body was flailing to and fro, frontward and backward. It's a wonder I didn't bash my head against the steering wheel. I was holding tight on the steering wheel to try to stabilize myself. And I lost it. I lost it. And these cries were coming out of me toward God. You know, what the hell's wrong with you? What the hell are you trying to do? What is this all about? And in the middle of this raging, screaming, crying fit, a sound came to my soul that said, I have shown you enough grace to where that you know that I do not judge you based on your works. When will you afford me the grace to stop judging me based on my works? And Barris, I went from a raging fool to complete peace in less than a fraction of a second. Because this understanding, while I can tell you how these words came succinctly, these words came completely in one lightning bolt of understanding. They didn't have to come to me in this laid out wordage. It was a revelation that hit me, an understanding that just overpowered my being. So with that tucked away in one of my experiences, all I'm hearing, Barris, in all of this argument is that we're trying to judge God based on his works. He can only be holy based on works. He can only be righteous and holy based on his works, based on our perception of what that is. So we have to strip God of anger and wrath and jealousy because, well, we know those aren't good things, so that can't be God. But folks, by the mirror image of that, you see, we cannot understand our redemption, our salvation.
So because those things can't work for us, we assume they can't work for God.
Well, it's actually that we are assuming they do work for us because we're good people. We're Christians. We don't get angry. We don't sin. We would never do that.
So it's a lot closer to straight-out hypocrisy.
It is straight-out hypocrisy to do this, not to even mention the scriptural integrity of literally gutting the Bible of the subject. It is amazing.
That is a thing which it's interesting how you and I come to the same conclusions at times based on rather different processes. But that is the thing that gets me. I mean, look. Okay, so God never killed people. God was never angry. God was, you know, always a loving papa. Well, sure, but just rewrite the Bible.
Yeah.
Because that's what
that's fine.
You have to do.
Now, here's the thing. With the understanding of the gospel revolution, it's irrelevant what you believe. The gospel is still the gospel, and you stand in no consequence for believing such things.
Does that mean it's a good thing to experiment with your beliefs?
Oh, I do all the time.
What do you think about the idea of belief?
I'm rapidly coming to the point to where that belief is just not a part of my life. I don't think that it is something that I need. I'm coming to conclusions based on what I know that the scriptures state. Now that may sound a bit audacious.
So you're drawing a line between what you know and what you believe.
That is coming to be. Now let me tell you, because I'm jealous of Paul again. See, I got jealous of Paul because he could live by the faith of the Son of God, and I had to live by my faith. And it's like, okay, dude, it's on, like Donkey Kong. If you can live by the faith of Son of God, this has got to be for me too. All right. So then, Paul also said that. He said that this revelation would result in knowing Christ, not believing in Christ. He said in his own testimony that he gave up his own righteousness that he may know him and the power of his resurrection.
And we know that the old Jewish scholars back several hundred years before the birth of Christ, they equated the concept of intimacy with what the Greeks called gnosis, or just, you know, we just call it knowledge, but it was far more than that. It was a knowledge that resulted in a change of an intimate relationship.
And you know, to me, it's almost like you have to believe in somebody you don't know. You don't have to believe in somebody you do know.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, you don't have to believe in Laura. You know Laura. You don't have to believe that she's going to care for you. You don't have to believe that she has integrity. You don't have to believe. It's just like what you just told me. These are not things you believe about Laura. These are things you know.
You know, I am going to call Bowler when we're done. And I'm going to say, Bowler, here is a podcast you really need to hear. I think you've convinced my boss.
Well, it is. I think it is a powerful thing. And knowing, believing was part of, quote, the roots. Faith was a part of the roots.
In the Bible, belief and faith are exactly the same word.
Exactly. And if it is by the faith of the Son of God, then my belief is irrelevant. And if it's based on if anything is based on belief, what degree of belief is acceptable?
A little, a lot. Great faith, mustard seed faith.
Exactly. And Jesus, and that's the point. Jesus said, if you had any belief or faith at all, bearers. Jesus said, if you had any at all, this is how powerful faith and believing is. You could say to this mountain, pluck yourself up from your roots and cast yourself across the continent and land in the sea.
What mountain?
Well, I think he was talking about Mount Sinai.
Based on what?
Well, Revelation kind of indicates that a burning mountain got flung into a sea. So we don't quote Revelation very much, but where it's convenient, we do.
All right. So we're not going to get to Exodus 20.
No, but that's
today.
Fine. But we're covering the subject. It's quite all right. This issue and what you just brought up, bears this. See, this is all part of the process. We're going through a process. Who are we to say God didn't go through a process?
If he made us in his image.
He made us in his image, and then we are now one with him. We're just catching up with the whole process that he went through to make us one. We're just now going through the process of accepting this being one. I know I do not accept the fact that I am one with God. I know I don't accept that. I accept it more than I used to. I understand it more than I used to. I embrace it more than I used to. I attribute it to you more than I used to. I attribute it to criminals more than I used to. But I ain't there yet, Barris. My mind is being renewed. I'm going through changes, even though I am one with God. So why is it such a difficult thing to say that God went through a process to get to here, and now we're going through a process to embrace that process? And if that process is the power of God, which that's what the gospel is called, it's good news, there's no more anger, that process in and of itself has to have power in it to help us embrace this new reality of being one. Not something that we have to grope out for belief or faith in, but that there's a story we can know. We can know the story. And we know from the story that this is truth. I think it's just the most powerful thing in the world. When I listen, now folks, I'm speaking passionately at this point, of obviously, about this, but I can tell you, I've listened to the guys online that advocate this position. And I can tell you, compared to the depth and the richness and the fractal nature of the gospel, to this perception that God was never angry, I am tasting wallpaper paste. It is the most flat, uninspiring, uninvolved, detached from thinking that I have listened to in a long time. Now, Christianity at least puts some challenges in there, you know. But this is just, let's whitewash God and then come up with something powerful out of that. I don't know how you can whitewash something and then come out. It's the story. Folks, it's the story of conflict is the power of the story. You can't name me a story that the story at some point does not fall into conflict, and it's the resolution of conflict that makes the story powerful. What story do you know? Even Bambi, for God's sake, is a story with a power at the end of it because of a conflict that arose. And if there is no conflict, there is no story. Please listen to me. If there is no conflict, you have no story.
Yeah, they'll have to figure that out. There's no more. And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Remember, religion wants to downsize your expectations, outsource your thinking, and repurpose your existence. God's eternal plan was to just enjoy the heck out of you and all of your uniqueness. Don't forget to visit www.thetruegospel.net and order your copy of Redemption, A Declaration for All, Not a Choice for a Few. One of the best books I've ever read. If you want to find a mind like yours that analyzes and parses things out in all of their entirety using the Bible, go read this book. It's great. We run a value for value model here, and it costs us time, cash, and energy to research, produce, and maintain this free product. This value for value model is the only way we feel that we can present the gospel freely and unhindered. So, if you feel that you've received real value from this podcast, I'm asking you to seriously consider donating to, oh, for goodness sake, look, a packet of cigarettes a week. Just go, or $10 a month. You know, I was listening to Mike Blanch, the vice president of the Gospel Revolution, on a previous podcast, and he was saying if everyone just gave, we've got well over 1,000 people listen to this podcast. If everyone just gave $10 a month, do you know how much of the gospel we could get out in places where it's really making a difference? Now, I want to say that it's making a difference in North America, but I have to tell you based on the facts that this is making a difference in Muslim countries, in African countries, in Southeast Asian countries. You know, our new friend Derek told me I guilted him into giving us money. Well, I'm glad. I'd like to say, well, I didn't mean to do that. No, I probably did. Look, for crying out loud, $10 is a meal out. Go cook yourself some lunch, cook yourself some dinner, and go give that meal to the Gospel Revolution. And you're not giving it to us, for crying out loud. What you're doing is you are giving that into somebody's life who themselves are starting off where you started off when you first heard the Gospel Revolution. Perhaps you'd like to invite Mike to your area? It's easier than you might think. Call our office on the number we just mentioned. That would be the number I didn't just mention, which is area code 321-220-4373, and speak to Jeffrey. Call our office on that number and tell us the details, and we'll be there. You want to leave a message for Mike or a question for him to answer, dial area code 234-564-0971. Leave me a voicemail. So now it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett from Music City, USA.
And it is good night from Michael Williams here in Houston, Texas. Thank you, guys. I appreciate very much your participating in our recent pledge drive. And thank you so very much. We love you. And we even love you guys who didn't or couldn't participate this time. And just keep listening. That's the thing that we're appealing to you in. Keep listening, because we're going through some very wonderful times here in the Gospel Revolution that is giving definition to things that, because we've never had challenges in some of these areas, we've never had to give the greatest definition to these things. We are looking forward to seeing you again and talking again. Please send us in your questions, send in your comments, especially now, especially in this situation where we're dealing with this issue of the anger of God or not. And let us know what you're thinking. Every thought that comes to you about this, let us know what that thought is, positive, negative. If you heard us say something that just ticked you off, let us know. Maybe we can say it in a different way. Maybe we intended to say it in a different way. This forum is completely open. You can address us. You can have input into everything that was said today and in every PowerCast you've ever heard. And we will air it. Love you. Look forward to the next time.
How many podcasts do you know where you can just plain criticize the people who are hosting it?
To the people. Yeah, to the people that are hosting it. Everybody criticizes the people they hear, but you can direct that criticism at us.
And we'll answer you online.
Yes.
You know, we hope that you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended, it doesn't mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Mm-hmm. And let me say also that just because we're offensive doesn't mean we're right. We love you guys. We're going to do this better next time, I guarantee you.